Chapter 3. Dead American Jews, Part 1. There are no words. This was what I heard most frequently from good people stunned by the news one Saturday morning in October of 2018. 11 people murdered at a Pittsburgh synagogue, the largest massacre of Jews in American history. But there are words for this. Entire books full of words. The books the murdered people were reading at the hour of their deaths. News reports describe these victims as praying, but Jewish prayer is not primarily personal or spontaneous. It is communal reading, public recitations of ancient words, scripts compiled centuries ago, and nearly identical in every synagogue in the world. A lot of those words are about exactly this. When I told my children what had happened, they didn't ask why. They knew. Because some people hate Jews, they said. How did these American children know that? They shrugged. It's like the Passover story, they told me, and the Hanukkah story, and the Purim story, and the Babylonians, and the Romans. My children are descendants of Holocaust survivors, but they didn't need to go that far forward in history. The words were already there. The people murdered in Pittsburgh were mostly old, because the old are the pillars of Jewish life, full of days and memories. They are the ones who come to synagogue first, the ones who know the words by heart. The oldest victim at the Tree of Life Synagogue was Rose Malinger, age 97. The year Malinger was born was the tail end of the mass migration of over 1 million Eastern European Jews to America. Many brought with them memories of pogroms, of men invading synagogues with weapons, of blood on holy books. This wasn't shocking, because it was already described in those books. On Yom Kippur in synagogue, these Jews read the stories of rabbis murdered by the Romans, including Rabbi Hanina ben Teradian, who was wrapped in a Torah scroll set aflame. Before dying, he told his students, "The parchment is burning, but the letters are flying free." My synagogue's old High Holiday Prayer Book, a classic edition edited by Rabbi Morris Silverman that dominated 20th century American synagogues, hints at what these stories meant to American Jews of Ms. Malinger's age. Its 1939 English preface asks, "Who can forget, even after decades, the sight of his father huddled in the great prayer shawl and trying in vain to conceal the tears which flowed down his cheeks during the recital of this poem?" By the time I was a kid reciting those poetic stories, no one was crying. Instead, my siblings and I smirked at the excessive gory details, the violence unfamiliar enough to be absurd. But Rabbi Hanina must have been right, because we were still reading from that same scroll, the same words Jews first taught the world. Do not oppress the stranger. Love your neighbor as yourself. People Ms. Malinger's age were in their 20s when word spread about mass murders of Jews in Europe. In synagogue on Rosh Hashanah, they read the old words begging God for compassion, for the sake of those killed for your holy name, and for the sake of those slaughtered for your uniqueness. My husband's grandparents came here after those massacres, their previous spouses and children slaughtered like the people in that prayer. They kept reciting the prayer. And for their new American family, it reverted to metaphor. In the decades that followed, Jews from other places joined American synagogues, many bringing memories that American Jews had forgotten. Those memories were waiting for them in the synagogue's books. On the holiday of Purim, they'd recited the Book of Esther, about an ancient Persian leader's failed attempt at a Jewish genocide. It's a time for costumes and levity, for shaking noisemakers to blot out the evildoer's name. One year, my brother dressed as the Ayatollah, and the Persians in our congregation laughed. Another year, someone dressed as Gorbachev. The Russians loved it. The evildoers seemed defeated. In 2000, when Ms. Malinger was 79, a Jewish senator was his party's nominee for vice president. A year later, the White House hosted its first official Hanukkah party. About a decade later, I attended one myself. In the White House, we recited ancient words thanking God for rescuing us from hatred. To older Jews, this felt miraculous. My parents and grandfather gawked at my photos, awestruck. But at the party, I met younger Jewish leaders who often attended these events. To them, this was normal. The ancient hatred was a memory. Words on a page. Or maybe it wasn't. In 2001, after terrorists attacked American cities, concrete barriers sprouted in front of my family synagogue, police cruisers parked in the lot. This felt practical in a nation on edge. We assumed it affected everyone. As my children were born and grew, the barriers and guards became their normal. When I took my children to an interfaith Thanksgiving service at a church down the street from our synagogue, one of them asked me why no one was guarding the door. In the years that followed, the internet suddenly allowed anyone to say whatever they wanted, rewarding the most outrageous from every political stripe. Soon, comment sections became an open sewer, flowing with centuries-old garbage. And as social media exploded, those comments evolved into open vitriol, as abstract hate scaled up to direct verbal attacks on Jewish institutions and individuals. To young Jews, this felt confusing. To old Jews, it must have felt familiar. A memory passed down and echoed in the holy books. When Ms. Malinger was 97, she and 10 other Jews were murdered in their synagogue. There are words for this, too. A Hebrew phrase for 2,500 years worth of people murdered for being Jews. Kiddush Hashem, death and sanctification of God's name. My children were right. This story is old with far too many words. Yet they were wrong about one thing. In the old stories, those outside the community rarely helped or cared. Our ancestors' consolation came only from one another and from God. But in this horrific new reality, perhaps our old words might mean something new. When they return to synagogue, mourners are greeted with more ancient words. May God comfort you among the mourners of Zion and Jerusalem. In that verse, the word used for God is hamakom, literally the place. May the place comfort you. May the people in this place comfort you. The first responders who rush to your rescue, the neighbors who overwhelm evil with kindness, the Americans of every background who inspire more optimism than Jewish history allows. May this country comfort you with its infinite promise. As George Washington vowed in his 1790 letter to a Rhode Island synagogue, America shall be a place where every one shall sit in safety under his own vine and fig tree, and there shall be none to make him afraid. Those words aren't his. They're from the Hebrew prophet Micah, on the shelves of every synagogue in the world. In synagogue, as always, we read from the scroll we call the Tree of Life, and the place will comfort us. As we put the book away, we repeat the words from Lamentations. Renew our days as of old.